Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, July the 1st, 186th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, bon vivant, Bill McCauley.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
If I only knew what that was.
That's all right. We both got our white pants on. That's all that matters.
Yeah, man. We're styling.
It's summertime. But we come back, we'll figure out. Oh, there's a sheet with fine print over there.
Yeah.
So we'll find out how fine is when we come back.
Music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. 1790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:15, all the weather you need to know right here. Bill McCauley is alongside. Our quote this afternoon comes from Louisa May Alcott.
Really?
Quote, "Fame is a pearl many dive for and only a few bring up. Even when they do, it's not perfect, and they sigh for more and lose better things in struggling for them." Isn't that cool? A little wordy for me, but
hey, well,
second half of the year.
That's, yeah, I mean, it's nice not to have to worry about fame.
Yeah, I don't think I do.
Yeah.
I hope I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm an accountant. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Think of it. Topic. Famous, famous CPAs.
CPAs, yeah. Yeah, that didn't invest. Where did the concept of a fiscal year come from? Why do we have that versus a calendar year for so many governmental entities, businesses, things of that nature? Why a July 1st start date?
Well, fiscal years have been around for a long time, and a lot of times it has to do with a business cycle or a revenue cycle. And so a lot of the reason that a lot of governments, as an example, have a fiscal year that starts July 1st and ends June 30th is because it seems to align with their revenue cycle. And so they're able to, as an example, property taxes are for that same fiscal year. So and I can't tell you exactly why it hasn't been a calendar all these years. From a guy who's done audits over the years, it's kind of nice that the audits are for the fiscal years in June 30 can happen later in the year because it helps us split our workload. But you'll also find that businesses will have fiscal years in many cases. A lot of times, it's limited to a relatively few types of entities that have fiscal years because of some inherent limitations in adopting a fiscal year for other types. So the most common thing we see a fiscal year in business in is just for a traditional C corporation. A traditional corporation often will have a fiscal year, particularly for closely held corporations, which is now topical and to speak about because of recent Supreme Court action. You'll see that, and a lot of times they're tied to a cyclical nature of the business and a natural year-end close, and that might.
So for like government getting tax dollars, income tax dollars, okay, that's a period of time and everything, or much of it has been gathered by that point, processed, and then they kind of know what they're playing with.
Right. And if you think of, if you're a retailer, what more natural fiscal year than December 31st because of, you probably have got a tide of business that came in, and that's probably, your high moment. But
logically, with the preparation that's necessary for the filing, I wouldn't think December would be a good period of time for a lot of businesses to be gathering information and putting things together. And
it adds to the crush at year end, you know, that we experience, whether we're preparing, you know, a lot of our calendar year businesses want to do some tax planning before year end. And so they are looking at having a fiscal year, they're looking at having to get materials tied up so that they are able to plan appropriately.
It's 3:19.
Nearly half a century in the news business should count for something. I'm Dave Silverbrand, and that's how long I've been watching the world go by. Now it's time to put it in perspective. Join me each weekday for a look at local news and views and what they mean to you from my perspective. Dave's Take Two on KWSW three times each day during the 8, noon, and 5 o'clock hours. Or read them on our website, kwsw980.com.
Good afternoon. KINS News and Information Time is 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Bill, do businesses, either startup businesses, because I'm imagining that they're the only ones that have the election option, think about what kind of fiscal year would really benefit them, either today or down the road? It would seem to me that most probably just kind of blunder into it.
Well, I think there's several factors that come into play. One of them is, you know, sometimes there's just such a clear, logical fiscal year because of the business cycle that somebody wants to use that.
Or an industry standard.
Right. And then, but in general, a lot of times, you know, we see fiscal years adopted simply to try to split the workload a little bit. In terms of, you know, if the corporate taxes are due, you know, if you have a June 30 fiscal year end and they're due September 15th, and your individual stuff is for on a calendar year and it's due April 15th, then you've kind of split some of that workload out. And so some people are choosing to do that. You know, we accountants like fiscal years when they're possible, because it enables us to have a logical or a more logical segregation of our work throughout the year. We tend to get workload compression, and for various reasons, it's getting worse, not better. And we're finding that you know, we see fewer fiscal years elected than in the past, often because of the entity selection.
Now, there are some that will go October 1 through September 30. Mm-hmm. And I just completely forgot what the industry was that I had as an example. Anyway, is there anything that the seasonality of that, would that tend to be like harvest, farms, ranches,
could be
things like that?
Could be. You also sometimes see medical practices with fiscal years. And those often are probably less because of the business cycle, although, and maybe more because of convenience. But, you know, we do tend to see those kinds of fiscal years adopted. Sometimes they were adopted many years ago, and nobody really knows why, but that's what it was.
The tradition counts for something.
Yeah, apparently.
Along with inertia. Yeah. How much of a hassle is it to change? I'm thinking, okay, we've got county governments, and they're told by the state they have to have budgets in by July 1st. Okay. If a special district is looking to form or to adjust, not that I'm thinking that any of these special taxing entities that's being whispered about are out there, but let's just say, for example, there was a services district that was mm-hmm. going to form. Are they required to go fiscal year, or could they step back 3 months so then when they're doing their budget, they know certain dollars that they're going to get, and they're not going to have to play some of the shenanigans and the games and the hedgings and the this's and the that's that a lot of governmental entities have to, because they don't know what their last number is.
Most governments are on a June 30 fiscal year. Most local, state and local governments are on a June 30 fiscal year, and it's done for it can be helpful to be on a June 30 fiscal year for granting purposes and for otherwise, you know, if as an example, you're looking for federal money that's coming through the state of California, and the state of California is the cognizant agency for these sub-grants that are going to come out. It's a lot easier from a paperwork standpoint if everybody's on the same fiscal year as opposed to on varying fiscal years. There are some statutes that require fiscal years, and I can't tell you exactly what the requirements are. We just don't. I mean, first of all, we don't see very many new. It's pretty pretty infrequent where you see, and particularly in this county, where you see new governmental agencies formed. You could conceive of, and not that I know anything. This is just me shooting from the hip, making an example. You could see at some point maybe that McKinleyville would become incorporated as a city as opposed to, you know, being operated through the services district up there, in effect. And you could see where that might happen, and there would be some decision making with regard to that. But my guess is that they would end up with the June 30. It's kind of you know when it's swimming with the tide.
I was thinking more of the head popping out the whack-a-mole. Swimming's easy. Getting thunked on the head. I'm getting tired of that one.
Yeah.
Is there any real solid reason to adjust and to change a fiscal year?
The most common reason that occurs is for some. If a traditional corporation is what we refer to as a C corporation, it's a tax concept, and then. Also, in a C corporation, just to kind of throw a little background out, a traditional corporation is taxed on its own net income. So it's a taxable entity. So if I have a C corporation, it's going to be paying tax based upon its financial results. It can claim deductions for salary payments to owners and others to reduce the amount of income that's subject to tax, which in turn puts money into the corporate owner's W-2, and it gets taxed an individual. But in general, it's a separate taxpaying entity. What we've seen beginning, I think, in the 80s, there was a new entity that was developed called an S-corporation. S-corporations are allowed to form, and an S-corporation is a pass-through entity, and it isn't taxed. With limited exceptions, it doesn't pay tax at the corporate level. And there are some exceptions, and we probably don't want to go into that minutia. But so in general, what happens is it's treated more like a partnership where things are passed through in terms of the income to the owners. So that's a real difference from that of a C corporation.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with noted seat. Wait, you're just grabbing at your collar because it's open.
It is. It is. No tie today.
Well, you know, I've got some red ink here. We could kind of color that in.
That might help.
Could, but it'd probably just screw up a shirt. Yeah. Before the break, Bill, we were talking about why would somebody want to change from one form to another? Yeah. And why would somebody want to change their fiscal year? Yeah. We can throw in, now that we got a little bit more time, the LLC and the LLP and all these various things that are out there floating around, the charities with the 503C12345s and I think you said last time, up to 8. All those different types of entities that most of us have interaction with in our day-to-day lives. The changing of these things. Does it impact us? Does it impact them? Why would anybody want to change?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you were going back to tying up the S corporation, C corporation issue, you know, the S corporations were new in the 80s. And so some people started S corporations and some people took their existing C corporations and made S elections to become an S corporation with the idea of trying to beat what we traditionally referred to as double taxation. In other words, the income is taxed in the corporation, and then if it's paid out as a dividend, it gets taxed to the recipient as dividend income. And back in the 80s, the dividend tax rate was there was no preferential dividend tax rate. So you're paying basically ordinary income rates on dividend income. So if you had a corporate tax rate that was 35%, and then you earned some income, then you paid a dividend out to the shareholders, the dividends were turning around, they could be taxed for federal purposes at that high level too. So you can see how quickly, you know, those earnings in the corporation, by the time they got into the shareholders' pocket, into the spendable side of the pair of pants, it was they were getting depleted pretty well. And so a lot of people wanted to become an S corporation to defeat that double tax situation that arose with a corporate structure. And so what happened was people began to make those elections. Well, some of those people were currently in fiscal years, and you could elect to become an S corporation, and you could elect to retain your fiscal year. But in order to, and that was a Section 444 election, I think. And making that election enabled you to retain the fiscal year, but you had to pay some taxes in advance, which in effect was like a deposit that you were putting on out there with the IRS in order to have this fiscal year. So what we've generally seen is there are very few S corporations that don't have a calendar year, and when we create a new one, they're almost always going to be a calendar year entity. And so what we've seen is, as a practitioner, we've seen some of our clients who were a fiscal year corporation become a calendar year S corporation, which shifted our workload, which maybe we were doing in summer, into the first 2.5 months of the year. And so workload compression continues to be a major topic in our profession because of the pressure that's occurred to have, you know, to accommodate, you know, as a CPA, I'd love to recommend to my clients, yeah, you should all be fiscal year corporations. Well, that's not in their best interest. It might be in my best interest, but it certainly wouldn't be in their best interest. So that's one reason why a lot of corporations end up making a change. It's a pretty simple process to do it. It's not terribly difficult. It's just basically making an election and filing the form. So it's paperwork in order to change the fiscal year from a fiscal to a calendar. If you want to go to a calendar to a fiscal, it's a little more complicated.
We've got these entities now, LLCs, LLPs. I don't know if there are any other LLs, but it seems like, you know, there are many.
There's
many
LPs.
Options. Yeah.
And there's Ps.
Yeah. What do those fall under? Are they S corps? Are they corps? Are they separate entities? Are they treated similarly? Are they different? How do they fit into this mix with fiscal year?
Well, let's talk about LLCs. LLCs can elect to be taxed either as a partnership or a corporation. The difference being, if it's taxed as a corporation, it's going to be subject to that double taxation issue we were talking about. And if it's taxed as a partnership, it's going to be taxed based upon it'll be taxed based on partnership, which means it's a pass-through entity. So as an example, if you and I have a partnership and we work all year and the partnership has made $100,000 and we're 50-50 partners and we split and whether we take a dollar out of that partnership or not, we're each going to be taxed on $50,000 of income because it's a pass-through. In other words, you look through the partnership entity and you say the owners are the ones that are going to pay the tax. Now, you could have also taken out the full 50. You could have taken out more, but you're only going to be taxed on the actual earnings of the LLC. So the LLC is a nice entity. We see it used a lot. It's relatively rare in my experience where we see LLCs taxed as a corporation. There are some examples, but mostly people make the election to be taxed as a partnership.
So why not? Why isn't there this huge tidal wave and everybody's would be really familiar with what LLCs are in traditional corporate structures other than those publicly traded go by the wayside?
Well, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Why isn't everybody an LLC?
Well, because certain
other than publicly traded,
certain entities are prohibited from being LLCs under state statute. As an example, certified public accountants are ineligible to form as an LLC.
Could you be a partnership?
Yes. And we can be a partnership, so that's a general partnership, or we can be a limited liability partnership, or we can form a professional corporation, which is taxed at the maximum corporate tax rate, so you don't get the advantage of the graduated corporate tax rate if you're a professional corporation, or you could be taxed as become an S corporation. So there's several choices in available for CPAs as an example, and in California the prohibition against LLC formation is based upon generally a professional type firm. So you're seeing law firms, accounting firms, engineering practices, architecture. I can't remember what all the list is, but there's a myriad of entities or professions, pardon me, that are ineligible to form as an LLC.
And for what purpose?
Because of the liability limitation. With an LLC, the liability is that of the entity. And so the concern is that from a public from the public's good, it's not in the public's interest that professionals could avoid the exposure yeah. for their own acts. Now, there is another type of entity that's available to those types of practices, and that's an LLP, a limited liability partnership. And a limited liability partnership is taxed as a partnership, but there is some limitations on liability. And what that our firm operates as an LLP. What it means is that one partner is only held ultimately liable for their own acts. So not all partners are potentially.
So it's not, if you got four partners, not everybody isn't at 25%.
In terms of that professional liability. So as an example, if
you do 10% of the load, you're responsible for your 10%.
If I'm working on a particular job and I make a mistake, then my house is at risk. If one of my partners is working on a particular job and they make a mistake, my house isn't at risk, but theirs is. So I guess what I'm saying is...
So it kind of keeps things in silos.
It does. It does. And so you'll see a lot of professional practices. You see attorneys and accountants forming as LLPs for that reason. And it does allow... Because in general, there's some advantages to forming a professional corporation, but there's some real disadvantages too. So we go through an analysis when a new professional practice is starting or when our existing professional practices consider whether they're the appropriate entity. And in doing so, and of course, decisions, you know, a lot of professional practices were organized a number of years ago when the considerations were all different.
Things have changed.
And so sometimes people need to reconsider whether they're in the right entity, but sometimes it's hard to get out of the one you're in.
I thought you were going to take that opportunity to just pounce other than death and taxes.
No, but I left it for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, right on the floor. I picked that up, didn't I? KINS, News and Information Times, 3:45.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. Well, we got about a minute and a half to go with Bill McCauley this afternoon. Bill, this concept or this definition of closely held business.
Yes.
We heard with that with Holly Lobby. What is a closely held business?
Closely held business let's just use a common sense definition. I could get into technical aspects of it, but let's just understand that it's going to be a business that's held by a relatively confined number of people.
Typically, family members
and their family members. So, as an example, okay. By attribution, if you owned a business and your son or your sons each owned some, those shares of stock would all be attributed to you. And so, there's a measurement on a percentage of ownership, a threshold that you have to meet, and a limitation on the number of owners that you have to meet in order to be considered a closely held business. There are a bunch of rules that affect closely held businesses in terms of certain deductions and other items. So it's an important one that we keep track of.
Thanks for coming by.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, well, maybe. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.